You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me now is George Glenos, who is the MD and founder of ETM Analytics in Johannesburg. All I can say to you, George, is that I'm looking from afar. You're in the midst of it. But this is an unmitigated disaster, what's going on in South Africa at the moment. It's I don't think it's ever been as bad as this in the time that we've been chatting.
No, I don't think it has. And going to stage six was just, salt in an already gaping wound. And quite clearly that the efforts that are being made at the moment are insufficient to obviously tackle the problem properly and resolve it once and for all. So we sit with a huge overhead that this country has to burden and the burden which we have to carry as taxpayers, and unfortunately it's sinking us, and you can see it in the GDP numbers, and almost certainly now if they don't arrest this kind of load shedding, we're in for another bout of recession.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it's woefully inadequate, whatever is being done, and I don't know what is being done, but whatever it is, as I say, it's just not enough. And I can't see someone coming along and saying, this is what we have to do, because we thought we had that person, but clearly we haven't got that person.
No, I think the entire situation is too politicized, Lindsay, for it to be resolved with the current actors that we have in place. It's far too politicized. If at this stage of the game we're still placating unions and worrying about BEE type credentials and worrying about all sorts of other political imperatives instead of just getting a job done, then I fear that this is all going to take a hell of a lot longer to resolve. So this needs to, I don't care if they fly in experts from overseas and pay them exorbitant salaries, but if they could just deal with this issue on merit, with people that clearly understand what needs to be done and how it needs to be done, I'd be willing to pay it right now, because the costs that we're suffering right now are running to the billions. In fact, I'd say over the past decade, many hundreds of billions of rand that we've lost as a country collectively, and you can the mind boggles as to what that ultimately implies for joblessness, about how far we would have been as a country had we not had this exorbitant burden. It's treasonous, to be quite frank. I can't use a strong enough word right now.
Yeah, how do you feel about it? Do you see any hope? Let's just take one specific example, if we can, because I'm getting annoyed as well as an adopted South African, even though I'm not living there at the moment. I do feel your despair. I feel that the Eskom situation cannot be resolved because there aren't the skills to resolve it. And if I was a foreigner and I was offered an exorbitant amount of money, if that's what it takes, I would think twice about coming to South Africa and helping out. But there clearly aren't the skills to sort the problem out, whether it be at the technical level, the mechanical level, or at the management level.
Lindsay, I'm not sure about the skills. I actually believe that the skills do exist in this country. My concern is that they're not being allowed to do what they need to do. So the one really positive thing that came out of SAA was the fact that it got stuck into business rescue, and that for the first time in quite literally a decade, if not longer, the decisions that are going to be taken right now are going to be taken on the basis of maths. The books have to balance, and you will take whatever decisions need to be taken in order to make the numbers balance. If they don't balance, you liquidate. And so it becomes a depoliticized mathematical stroke accounting project that you undertake to see to seek the best solution for all parties involved. The problem with Eskom is that we're not there. And because it's such a systemically important organization, because it is too big to fail, quite literally, it's the best example of it, it cannot be allowed to fail. The country would come to a standstill. So it continues to get bailed out, and whether the taxpayer likes it or not, they are continuously going to fit this bill, and therefore it remains a politicized organization. This decision to split it up into three, I think, holds some merit if the middle company, in other words, the transmission company, is allowed to purchase electricity on a least cost basis, if they are allowed to purchase electricity from the IPPs at a reasonable price that at least balances out between costs and recovery. Well, you know, that will certainly help. But government right now needs to, if they're not prepared to privatize through the selling off of state assets, then at the very least what they need to do is free up the private sector to be able to sort its own solutions out. And I have it on very good authority that there are many companies and many households that would take matters into their own hands and sort themselves, get themselves off the grid, or even produce electricity that they could sell back into the grid if they were allowed to do so. So at this point in time, that would be one potential solution. And there's a lot of positive spin-offs that could come out of that. But it requires that kind of decision-making. And at this point in time, it just seems like a stretch for them to go that route, purely because you get bogged down in the politics of it all.
Yeah, unfortunately, depoliticization, if that's a word, is not going to happen in South Africa because we're steeped in politics and our history is political. And therefore, that legacy is going to carry on for a while. I don't think you're ever going to get the situation where politics and unions do not come into the equation and the decision-making process. So unfortunately, your idea is great, but it's not going to happen, not in our lifetime anyway.
So I think we must be careful about saying that because I've, SAA for one is an example of exactly what I'm referring to. So with every country and with any economy anywhere in the world, you do reach a limit. Greece reached it back a few years, 10 years ago. Greece reached it. So there comes a point where, at which point you're getting bailed out, and let's not mince our words, but South Africa starts hitting the fiscal wall and loses its fiscal sovereignty. In other words, it loses its ability to take those economic decisions on its own and gets dictated to by creditors. You very much get into a position of a depoliticized decision-making process, purely because creditors are not going to lend money to a country if they see every chance of it being lost. So they will dictate terms, and the government, if they want to keep current structures afloat, will accept those terms in the same way that SAA is now going to be accepting some very, very harsh terms by the business rescue practitioner who's going to come in as a hatchet man, clean up that company. If it can be solved, it will be solved, and if it can't, it will be liquidated. And unfortunately, that's what happens when you get to the point of no return. South Africa is not far from that point right now. From fiscally speaking, if one looks at the numbers, that just don't stack up over the next 3 to 5 years. So I'm not saying that we're going to be hitting a fiscal wall in the next year or so, but within the next 3 to 4 years, unless we implement some very deep-seated reforms, we absolutely do. And at that point, never mind just Eskom, it starts to roll through the entire government structure. And as it has done in Greece and many other countries such as Brazil, Argentina, Venezuela, there comes a point when you hit a wall, the money's not there, you start, that process of depoliticization happens whether the politicians like it or not. In fact, I'd go one step further and to say that typically when you get to that point of losing fiscal sovereignty, you can often find there are many, many examples of regime change that take place at the same time, just due to the maladministration that creeps in. So I think things can change in politics. They can change quite dramatically, and quite often the catalyst for that change can be economic.
Okay, well, why don't we do this? Bring it forward. Bring the bailout forward. Get it out the way. Let somebody else come in and take the reins and impose their will upon us, their economic will, their fiscal will. And they say, well, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. Like a delinquent bank account holder or something. The bank says, Joy, you've got to do this now. You've got to pay this amount back per month. You've got to cut your spending down to this. I don't know. Maybe it's the time to have some tough love here and to take a tough decision and say, we can't do it on our own. Bail us out, please, and help us. The rand goes to 20-25 against the US dollar, but so what? In the long term, it's probably going to be a good thing.
So quite often, sorry to use a perhaps an insensitive example, but if a patient is extremely sick and has cancer and has to go through chemotherapy to get better, quite often that patient suffers a great deal of pain and sickness before they get to the point of turning around. It's a little bit like that in the case of a country that's been fiscally delinquent. The medicine that gets prescribed to the patient is medicine that, in fact, if anything, at first makes you feel worse before you feel better. But there is a positive that comes out of that, in that once you have cleaned the decks and pushed the reset button, you then get to grow off a base that is sustainable and one that is clear for everyone to see where the value lies and how it can be managed as opposed to the very opaque structures that we have right now. So you may be right. That could be the first solution, which is why I think everyone so much emphasis on the upcoming budget to see whether this reformist, and I put that in inverted commas, reformist government actually does deliver on any reforms whatsoever. If they do, I think South African markets respond quite positively. If they don't, and there's no conceivable expectation of improvements in the restructuring of SOEs and government finances, then the steady slide towards the fiscal cliff continues.
The sad thing is we're blessed with so many natural resources and so much potential future income and current income and future income for future generations, but it's just not being exploited. We need to be exploitative. We need to go back to the values that, unfortunately, under an unpalatable political dispensation, politics aside, we did well.
Yeah, I mean, to call it wasted opportunity at the moment would be the understatement of the century. I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's so much more that could be done with an economy like South Africa's, bearing in mind that we still have some pretty good infrastructure down here. We have some of the most sophisticated financial institutions in the world. There's so much that could be leveraged off in order to generate the kind of growth that you're referring to and to extract the benefits that are possible. But we keep shooting ourselves in the foot. This disaster of Eskom is more like taking a cannon to a leg than shooting a foot. It's devastating. It's absolutely devastating. And one hopes that we get to a solution which includes the private sector that helps to ease the pain and changes the mix of production over time, such that we become less dependent on Eskom. But unfortunately, even if we go that route, that's a medium longer-term solution. That's not something that's going to help us over the next year or two, which is a very dangerous position to be in, given the state of the global business cycle and just how mature it is. So, if we're finding it difficult to fund ourselves currently, and we live in a relatively benign global environment right now, can you imagine how much tougher it might be if we do go into another global downturn?
Yeah, well, that's what I've always said. It'll be ironic if we do stabilize the ship. There's no sign of that happening. But if we did, and suddenly the global economy turned down, then it would be a bitter irony and a bitter pill to swallow. Okay, so any good news, George? We've got PRASA, we've got SAA, we've got flooding, we've got excessive heat in certain parts of the country and drought and everything. There must be some good news somewhere. Or am I clutching at straws here?
No, look, I think the fact that SAA is in business rescue, I deem as a positive. One way or another, we bring this to an end. The PRASA decision, placing it under administration, is again acknowledgement of just how badly things have gone. And potentially we get to grips with the magnitude of the problem and fix that. Eskom is in full-blown crisis, and it's all hands on deck. We've gotten a new CEO. The split in the company, the unbundling, is going to happen. Just at face value, that doesn't fix anything. But if one reads between the lines as to the National Treasury's Economic Rejuvenation Plan, it seems to me like the splitting of Eskom is very much to isolate specific kinds of problems rather than lumping a board with all of the problems all at once, but also to help privatize the electricity generation industry, not necessarily to privatize Eskom, but to crowd in the private sector as part of the solution for the country's electricity problems. So, you know, those are some of the silver linings, but we need action for that to materialize.
Yeah, indeed. George, just on a personal level, how has load shedding in the last few days affected you? Because we have to multiply that by millions.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very difficult. The amount of wasted time in traffic is just one tiny little aspect of it. But the amount of money we're paying every month just to keep a diesel generator running so that we don't have downtime and can service our clients abroad costs us many thousands of rand a day. And that, you know, multiplied by the amount of days that we have load shedding, you know, is money that unfortunately I would have far rather distributed to staff as bonuses, which I can no longer do. So, you know, just to give a small microcosm of how it's affected us and our business, you know, it's money literally blown out the back of an exhaust pipe that could be utilized a whole lot more productively within the economy and generated goodwill, not just within the staff, but the, you know, on a mass scale, if that's done by many companies, you know, there's economic prosperity to be had of that. But alas, that's not where we are. So we live with the frustration. We try and mitigate the full-blown effects of it as much as we can, but it's expensive to do so, and it's money wasted.
Yeah, it is money wasted. I don't want to harp on this point, but I was looking at the Stock Exchange News Service announcements this morning, and at 9:38 or something like that, Harmony said they're going to have to cancel some shifts because of load shedding. And at the same time, I was bemoaning the fact that I had three interviews cancelled yesterday because the people concerned either couldn't get home because of traffic lights being out, or there was no power at their house, and therefore there was no internet, and so they didn't feel comfortable doing the interview. So, I mean, on a micro scale like mine, and on a macro, a much larger scale like industry, it's appalling.
Yes. I mean, it's, as I said, it's devastating. I mean, trying to put numbers to this is equally, it's impossible, quite literally impossible, because whilst we might be able to quantify the loss to a mine of not being able to run at full capacity, and whilst I can quantify the losses to my business because of what I'm blowing on diesel, you got to ask yourself, and this is the hidden cost that no one will ever be able to put a number on, how much investment has South Africa not enjoyed because that investment required stable electricity supply, and it just never came into South Africa's borders to begin with. So if you begin to look at the opportunity cost of all of that, you know, we could over the past 10 years comfortably be running close to a trillion rands worth of losses that we've suffered as an economy, which is, you know, that is material to everybody concerned, not just business, but to the many thousands and millions of people that might have been employed had this not been the case.
George, thank you very much for that sobering chat and for your honesty. That's George Glenos, who is the MD of ETM Analytics in Johannesburg. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.